digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
I'm sitting here with Greg Ostick of OurSide.net. He's one of the leaders in designing and developing, with the BioNutrient Food Association, a handheld device that is a spectrometer, a bionutrient meter, or lately a gizmo, that will be used by a farmer or a consumer. They can aim it at a fruit or vegetable that gives the user a way to measure quality at point of purchase or in the field. It looks like it could be a game changer. I don't know. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think people really find the idea compelling that it could change behavior in grocery stores and on farms. I think that's where people really connect. You know, they realize that if we could separate food based on actual measured quality rather than based on a standard like organic or non-organic or just based on taste or look, that could really drive economic change towards farms who produce quality, regardless if that farm is certified organic or not certified organic or whatever. And that's just, it's a market force that doesn't exist today. And I think that's why people find it sort of compelling.
And did I get it right? You can aim it at the fruit or the vegetable and get a reading? At first, will it be on the handheld device, or will it be attached, like, say, to your iPhone or whatever you have?
So we're still pretty early in the development. So we do have a device. Right now, we've been testing it both on the surface. We've been testing it with carrots. We're testing on the surface and also chopping up the carrots so they're homogeneous, and then measuring chopped up carrots like in a cuvette. So, you know, we're not to the point where we have a device that you're ready to go buy and stick on a pepper somewhere. But we have lots of good reason based on previous work to believe that we can be successful in at least some of the nutritional parameters in some products. But yeah, the goal would be something that you could point in the store at something like a carrot, and it would tell you roughly the nutritional content. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the question is then, what's the definition of nutritional content? So those are all things that we have to walk through.
So let's break it down just a little bit. So first of all, how did you come to the project?
I talked to Dan Kittredge from the BFA and David Forster, also from the BFA, about a year ago. I think that was through a mutual friend, basically. And I'm passionate about open technology and about open source software and hardware. And I think Dan had been working, and the BFA in general had been interested in this kind of meter for a long time. I think for 5 or 7 years he's been talking about it.
That's true.
And I think he's gone through several iterations of trying to find partners with the capability to actually build something. And I think at that time, he had done enough times where he had realized he was kind of barking up the wrong trees. The shiny trees are not always the right trees. And I'm not a shiny tree. So I think when we talked, we connected on sort of an ideological level about how the world should work and what our role should be in it, and built some trust in a way that allowed us to move forward together. And I think that's still the basis on which we interact today, is really believing something about the world and how it should work and pursuing that, even if it isn't necessarily a traditional path, from a technology perspective. Mm. And I think that's part of the reason why BFA members engage in it as well, because they feel like we're providing them with an honest and straightforward perspective on this development process, which is what we're in.
So to flesh that out a little bit, you're talking about keeping the unit in its development open to anybody to see what you're doing, and also whatever data is going to be collected at some point, or even as you go now, is going to be also open to anybody to see and help you. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Nothing will be patented, and as much as is possible, all the data will be open. Obviously, sometimes there's privacy concerns, but the default should be open. And that's because we're not trying to put a black box on shelves and have people come buy it. We're trying to build something in collaboration with the community that will be the best thing for the community. And that means engaging the community in the development process. So we can't engage them in the development process if everything's closed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So at some point in the next 2 years, a prototype will go out?
Yeah, the first prototype, my hope is within a year we have a prototype that's for kind of super users, people who are willing to take a little bit more time and effort, you know, who aren't necessarily going to get an answer on every carrot, but are willing to collect some data and improve the device. And then maybe in 2 to 3 years we'll have something for, you know, that would be more commercially viable. But, you know, it's going to be a process. So
when it finally gets to the general public, it makes its debut, let's say it's 5 years from now,
sure,
that there is an actual unit that's going to hit the internet, sold at Amazon. It'll be sold, right? And then the money goes to more development, doing the lab work, things like that that are inevitable in this kind of project?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the development never stops. You can't just make one thing once and sell it for the next 100 years, especially now. And that's especially true in this space because sensors and computers are just changing so fast, you have to keep up. So yeah, the money would go towards making sure that 3 years from then we had the best device on the market and that, you know, it could do a wider range of fruits and vegetables in a more accurate way.
I heard you say that the equipment, the physical unit, is diminishing of diminishing importance, and that more important is the data.
Yeah.
Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. People have probably heard a lot about sort of big data and using artificial intelligence to look at a large amount of data and pull out insights, pull out things that we can learn. It's a common strategy now in the sensor space, and that's kind of the strategy that we're applying. We're taking spectral data, so light, flash of light on a thing, and then you know, that light doesn't see, for example, minerals, but it might relate to mineral content. But that relationship is going to be complicated, and the only way we can get at that relationship is by having enough data and enough models that we can fit the two. So, you know, in the context of the BFA, it's really great to have members who are actively growing a wide range of food because we can collect all those samples to build that database. You know, if we had to do that ourselves as developers, that would take a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of flying around to get all the carrots that we would need to calibrate carrots.
And that's why you're going to have super users to take some calibrations for you.
Exactly.
And send the data in.
Right.
So I guess this is a good time to bring up Farmer OS.
Yeah,
because that's where it's going to go, right?
Yep.
So could you explain a little bit about Farmer OS, and is it Doran Cox?
Doran, yeah.
Doran Cox, who's the researcher in charge of that sort of aspect of it. And you guys are cooperatively working on this project, and the data will end up in his part of the project.
Yeah, it's, you think about it kind of like, well, you know, everybody has computers, right? You probably have Dropbox or Google Drive or your iPhone. All of your stuff talks to everything else. You don't even notice it in the background. But there's a whole bunch of programs in the background making sure that the file you thought you put there is also in five other locations and is available here, and the metadata's here, and you get reminded about it here. The same way that companies have to build those connections, we, in trying to look at the food system, have to build those connections. The difference is we're not making a walled garden like Apple does. It means that OurSci as a company and Dorn and Mike, you know, as a nonprofit, and some other person as a company who has a different piece of software, we all have to talk to each other because we're all in different parts of the supply chain. You know, some provide services to farmers like PharmOS does. We're providing services to consumers. Other provide services to researchers who want to be able to look at the data. So that data needs to be able to move around to PharmOS and other places. So yeah, there's a whole ecosystem we have to build, and hopefully we'll build it in an open and transparent way.
So I'm not sure we're getting to the listener exactly what PharmOS is. It's sort of like an interface. You go to a website, yeah, and there's a lot of tabs and
right,
things you can do there. You explained it really well.
Sorry.
That's okay. So tell us about PharmOS's, you know, interface. Like, it'll probably be a sign-up thing, right? You'll become a member of PharmOS. Is that way? You have your own account?
Well, yeah. PharmOS is like, it's like a web page for your farm. I guess, you know, that's what Mike says. I think it's the best way to explain it. So you can put, you know, each field in. You see a little map with all of your fields. You can say when you want to plant something and when you expect to harvest it. It'll remind you. You know, it'll create a set of tasks, you know, so it says, oh, in 3 days you gotta weed your garden, and in 5 days you gotta harvest it, whatever. So it's really to help people organize their farms. And like Mike says, and Dorn, the first thing it needs to be is practically useful to farmers. You know, it's nice to make all these widgets and pieces to it, but unless somebody wants to use it, it doesn't really matter.
Right, it has to be practical.
It has to be practical first. And then, down the road, if we can share data and that's useful, great. But you can't go sharing data with everybody and make this big system. And if it's not practical up front, it's not going to work. And I think they've done a good job of trying to focus on making it practical.
And it has to be reasonably priced so they can get into it. Because farming is tough. The margins are slim.
Yeah. And PharmOS is, I think there's two ways to get it. You can install it yourself, which most people won't do. But in theory, in that case, it would be free. Or you can just go have someone host it for you, which means it's sitting on their server and you just log into it like you would, you know, like you would your email
QuickBooks
or something. QuickBooks. That's a great example. It's like QuickBooks. It'd be like QuickBooks. But I think that the cost of hosting for that is quite low. It's not particularly expensive.
It looks really impressive. I was impressed by the moving the cattle from pen to pen or pasture to pasture.
Yeah.
To say, okay, you got to do that today. And in David Montgomery, who in his new book, he talks about how some farmers now have it electronically, the gates electronically, that they use their same computer to open the gate, and the bull leads everybody into the next pasture because there's better grass over there.
Yep. Yeah, it's all getting automated. And I would definitely say that, you know, the private software and hardware companies are technologically ahead of where we are, there's no doubt. But it's a process. There's a lot of programs and software where the open source alternative to a commercial product is behind for a long time, and then people start catching on and it becomes the standard. It's happened many, 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 many times. So it's a slow process, but
that's great.
Yeah.
So you say you're at an early stage, but so you must be working on exactly what you want to measure, right? I mean, so you said you're doing carrots and stuff, but you're not. It's not just carrots and spinach. Behind the scenes, you're figuring out, are we going to measure mineral content, or are we going to measure bacteria? Are we going to measure moisture? Are we going to measure what?
Yeah.
So you must have a starting point. What have you chosen to start with?
Yep. So, well, from a technology perspective, you know, we have an instrument that uses 10 LEDs to flash the light. So those are the wavelengths. And then the things that we're correlating to, the lab measurements that we're correlating to, we've chosen four to start. Antioxidants, polyphenols, proteins, and minerals, using a tool called the X-ray fluorescence XRF. And we chose those four because we're trying to do this thing where we're collecting enough data where we can predict one thing from another, which means we need, you know, I guess in a mushy way, hundreds, maybe thousands of measurements. That's a lot. So those four things commercially would normally be like $500 per sample times 1,000 measurements. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
It's not realistic.
Wow.
And if we're just trying to get proof of concept, let's say maybe we can 100 or 200 or 300 for proof of concept, it's still a lot. So we pick those measurements because we can actually do those on the bench without a lot of expensive equipment ourselves. And we think that they are pretty representative of general nutrition. And again, we can debate all day about what nutrition is.
Yeah,
everyone gets
subject.
That.
Yeah.
It's a different subject. But you have to at some point just choose something and go with it on the best basis that you can manage. And that was what we did. So our hope is that by choosing those four things, we can keep the cost down, which will allow us to get the proof of concept without $1 million and move on from there. But yeah, those are the things that we chose for our lab comparison. And we also are going to measure soils at the same time because people are really interested in the connection between soil quality and soil health and food quality and food health. And then, of course, like human health. But that last connection between food and human health is hard.
Tough. That's a tough one. Yeah.
We're not going to just start that right off. Like, it's,
I don't envy you. But I bet you it's also exciting, right?
It is, yeah.
It's an exciting task.
I think we can do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think we can do it. But people will have to be patient, and they'll have to be aware that it's a process. They're involved in a process, not a product. And, you know, like I said today, it's if there's one thing, you were talking to this behavioral economist, and he said his job was to try to change people's behaviors. And I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing.
What a job.
You come work for me. I've got all kinds of behaviors I'd love for you to change. But the one thing I would most like for people to change their behavior is about their relationship to technology, because right now, you know, people just want to go buy something on a shelf. And I would really love to convince people that they can, like I said, take control of their technological futures, be involved in the development, creation of things, so that they're not subject to the interests of the company alone, which, again, I've got nothing against companies, but they're not necessarily consistent with my interests or the interests of the community that they're developing for.
Right, they're interested in a profit.
They're interested in a profit, and that's great.
So but they may even suppress something that may be good for you because it's not a profitable thing.
And it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. That's not like conspiracy theory stuff. It happens all the time.
Sure, sure. And maybe it'll happen now with the bionutrient meter, right?
I'm not going to do it, but maybe somebody else will do it. I mean, that is one benefit of keeping everything open and as public as possible. It makes it very hard for someone to cut you off at the pass.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to run into competition from commercial models, do you think? I mean, I'm sure, I know there's some out there. I know an Israeli unit, there's other units.
The SIO.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to have too much luck so far, or at least not getting any further. It's a lot more hype than anything else. But there will be some that come along. I think that's something you will either withstand or you won't. You know?
I welcome competition. It's not my dream to build an instrument and control the world. If somebody else builds something as good and it's public and ideologically consistent with what we're trying to do and they can sell it, great. Like, flood the market. That's the point.
Right. The discussion comes up about, will this just make the elites know what's good stuff and what will happen to the masses if they can't afford the unit? Hopefully they can get around, or maybe there's a group unit or something like that. I mean, and that's what you mean by ideologically, that we're worried about those kind of things also. You know, you want to make all mankind have a better food source than just a few.
Right. Well, and I want to make sure that the technology involved in creating it, both the data and the technology, is open. Because if it's not open, then we've lost it. As a community, we've lost our ability to set the direction. And, things can become monopolies pretty quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
It doesn't take long.
Yeah.
Especially when there's precedent. You know, academia does this a lot, where someone will publish a paper 25 years ago using an instrument, and then everyone will try to replicate their work or try to expand on their work, and they'll just take whatever that instrument was and they'll just buy it. And after 25 years, everyone's just, all of the data has been done on this one instrument. And so even if there's better stuff out there, everyone's still stuck in this little universe. This one instrument. It doesn't take long.
So I get that by keeping it open like this, you're hoping somebody comes along and gives you a wrinkle, maybe even, that makes it better.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
Not only the physical unit, but even the data.
Of course. Yeah. And I mean, I think if we have a stream of data that we're collecting, actual carrot samples, for example, that we're calibrating our data with, that's also a place that someone can come in and say, hey, look, you've got all these amazing people collecting data. I have a different question I want to ask, not about carrots, but about something else. Can you ask them to bring some spinach? right? If you wanted to start that experiment from scratch, that would take a lot of effort. But if we already have a channel created to do that, you know, it's kind of low-hanging fruit.
So the next object, after you have this this unit, and you say you want to get into the, you know, significant users, people who are really good farmers, who are also buying into the idea of more nutritional growing, organic, all that kind of stuff. How many units do you think you have to get out into the community, start getting data that makes it a tipping point where it's valid data on knowing what's a good carrot or what's a good apple or a peach?
It'll depend on the product, but like, let's say carrots, my guess would be, let's say you wanted to be reasonably confident that you chose a random carrot in the United States and you were reasonably confident that the answer was correct. Let's say you have to, if you don't define the conditions, then I can't give an answer. So let's define those as the conditions. My guess would be, you know, more than 1,000, you know, less than 5,000 samples. In the United States, pick a random carrot, and you're reasonably confident that the results we give from this, from our tool, are correct. How many samples would you need to build a database to be reasonably confident? But I would say somewhere between 1,000 and 5,000 is my guess.
Okay, so this is another question. How about this unit? When you measure what you measure, and you've done all the work behind the scenes that says this is what this carrot is, are you going to give two different ways of looking at it, or one way to look at it? Like, what I'm saying is, are you going to show somebody on their iPhone, in the app that goes with it, all the results of what's in that carrot that makes it good? Or is it going to be, red is green, buy it. You know what I'm saying? Is it going to be red, yellow, blue, green?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
That's a good
question. I'm wondering, you know, as a consumer, that would be probably the easiest.
Well, you tell me. What do you want? I mean, ultimately,
I would like a combination of them, personally.
I feel
a little bit of information, but I think too much information could suppress the unit. I mean, people will just throw their hands up and go,
I don't know what this
you know, could I just get a green light here and I'll buy it?
Right.
You know, I got to go home and feed the kids.
Yeah, I think that's a user interface design question.
Still to come.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably look to video game profiles for a good example of how that would look, because they've been doing this for years. You know what I mean? They have it down where you kind of like your eyes get drawn to it. But yeah, I agree with you, actually. I would want one number at the top, and then I would want a set of categories with little bars that go from green is full and red is low. That's
right.
What I would want.
Or a drop-down menu, maybe.
Or maybe a drop-down menu. And I think what I also want, which is, I think this is why the survey is important, I want to know relative to other carrots, right? I want to know, like, if you took 100 carrots, how good is this carrot relative to a sampling of 100 other carrots in polyphenols? Is this a 99th percentile carrot or a 1% top carrot? Because telling me how many milligrams per gram of whatever, that doesn't really tell me that much. Telling me relative to other carrots is much more meaningful, I think, to human beings. I don't know what your opinion is on that, but
doesn't matter.
I guess I don't know.
Let's get all the experts to the think tanks to come up with the answer.
Right. But if the first time the answer is like, well, 2, you know, polyphenols number is 2, well, what does 2 mean? Is that high or low? I mean, you need to give them some context,
sure.
I guess.
I understand. Is this like working on the first light bulb or the phonograph? Or, I mean, do you feel like you're working on something significant? Like, you know, it could make some change like those things did?
I do. Yeah. I don't think it's like the light bulb because, maybe it is. I don't know enough about the history of the light bulb.
Yeah.
But
that truly was a unique technology when it came out.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
This is not so unique, but it is different. It's a different application.
Yeah. And you know, I said this before, it's people are attracted to the device because of, you know, this idea that you can really change behavior. But the device is going to change, you know. We're engaging in a process. Like, this little black device that we made is probably going to be in the trash heap in 2 years, and we'll have to redo all this stuff on a new device.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have the structure and the sample stream and the community to redo it again in 2 years, we're SOL, right? That's mm-hmm. the end of it. So the key is that we develop the community for the ongoing process and that we establish a culture in the food production and consumption space that data should be by default open.
Right.
Because right now, like, how much data do we really have about the systems? We have some, but it's mostly from like the Chicago Board of Trade. And then every 10 years, the USDA goes out and takes some carrots and says, here's what your typical carrot looks like. We don't have an immense amount of data in real time about what goes into the grocery store. And in the next 10 years, we're going to have it. And it's either going to come from some open project like this one, which sets the norms and the culture and the expectation for the next 100 years, or it's going to come from some company, which is going to control and maintain that data and sell it back to us. So far more important than this device is establishing an appropriate culture around our information around our food, that it's open and publicly available.
Let's leave it at that. Greg Ostick of OurSci.net, and he's working on the bionutrient meter, which we hope comes about and is as successful as we all dream. You know, it's one of those things that's really a cool concept. Well, good luck with all this. I really appreciate you sitting down with me.
Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.